Our study at this time is in the 16th chapter of Deuteronomy, and this chapter is primarily concerned with restating the command to keep the three yearly feasts. So we'd like to, as we study through this, give a brief explanation of the three feasts that they were to observe each year. In the first verse of chapter 16, observe the month of Abib, and keep the Passover unto the Lord thy God. For in the month of Abib, the Lord thy God brought thee forth out of Egypt by night. This Passover was a commemoration of the time that the Lord had the Passover angel to come, and he actually passed over the households of Israel that had this lamb's blood on the door, and he took the lives of the firstborn of the Egyptian people, not only their children, but also their livestock. And so each year they were to commemorate this with the feast known as the Passover feast. And before we get into what's said here in Deuteronomy, I'd like to turn back to Exodus 12 and read a few things that's said there about the Passover and the Passover feast. Now, Exodus 12 is concerned with several things. It tells, first of all, how they were to observe the feast. It also tells how they were to commemorate or this as a memorial after they had gotten out of Egypt in the later years. So beginning with the third verse of Exodus 12, speak ye unto all the congregation of Israel, saying, in the tenth day of this month shall they take to them every man a lamb, according to the house of their fathers, a lamb for an house. And if the household be too little for the lamb, let him and his neighbors next unto his house take it according to the number of the souls. Every man according to his eating shall make your count for the lamb. Your lamb shall be without blemish, a male of the first year. You shall take it from the sheep or from the goats, and you shall keep it up until the 14th day of the same month, and the whole assembly of the congregation of Israel shall kill it in the evening. And they shall take of the blood and strike it on the two side posts and on the upper door posts of the houses wherein they shall eat it. And they shall eat the flesh in that night, roast with fire and unleavened bread and bitter herbs they shall eat it. Eat not of it raw, nor sodden it all with water, but roast with fire, his head with his legs and with the pertinences thereof. And you shall let nothing of it remain unto the morning, and that which remaineth of it unto the morning you shall burn with fire. And thus shall you eat it, with your loins girded, your shoes on your feet, and your staff in your hand, and you shall eat it in haste. It is the Lord's Passover. For I will pass through the land of Egypt this night, and will smite all the firstborn in the land of Egypt, both man and beast, and against all the gods of Egypt I will execute judgment. I am the Lord. And the blood shall be to you for a token upon the houses where you are, and when I see the blood, I will pass over you, and the plague shall not be upon you to destroy you when I smite the land of Egypt. And this day shall be unto you for a memorial, and you shall keep it a feast to the Lord throughout your generations. You shall keep it a feast by an ordinance forever. Now, skipping on down in this 12th chapter of Exodus to the 24th verse, and you shall observe this thing for an ordinance to thee and to thy sons forever, and it shall come to pass when ye be come to the land which the Lord will give you, according as he hath promised, that ye shall keep this service. And it shall come to pass when your children shall say unto you, what mean ye by this service, that ye shall say, it is the sacrifice of the Lord's Passover, who passed over the houses of the children of Israel in Egypt, when he smote the Egyptians and delivered our houses, and the people bowed the head and worshipped. Now this phrase, this verse, it says, when your children shall say unto you, what mean you this service? And the answer that was given there in the 27th verse, that traditionally this is asked each time that they keep the Passover, and the head of the house then gives this answer. Then he further says in that same chapter, Exodus 12, beginning with the 43rd verse, and the Lord said unto Moses and Aaron, this is the ordinance of the Passover, there shall no stranger eat thereof, but every man's servant that is bought for money, when thou hast circumcised him, then shall he eat thereof. a foreigner, and an hired servant shall not eat thereof. In one house shall it be eaten. Thou shalt not carry forth aught of the flesh abroad out of the house, neither shall ye break a bone thereof. All the congregation of Israel shall keep it. And when a stranger shall sojourn with thee, and will keep the Passover to the Lord, let all his males be circumcised, and then let him come near and keep it, and he shall be as one that is born in the land, for no uncircumcised person shall eat thereof. One law shall be to him that is homebound, homeborn, and unto the stranger that sojourneth among you. Thus did all the children of Israel, as the Lord commanded Moses and Aaron, so did they. So that's the institution of this Passover back in Exodus 12. He tells how they did it then and the fact that they were to keep it as a memorial throughout their generations. So several times now in the Old Testament, we do have a recount given of these feasts. And this chapter here in Deuteronomy 16 is just giving another account of the feasts. So we'd like to kind of review some of the things about it. This first verse, observe the month of Abib, and keep the Passover unto the Lord thy God. For in the month of Abib the Lord thy God brought thee forth out of Egypt by night. This month of Abib also has the name of Nisan. It, because of this great feast that was kept here, became a very, very important month. So that there are several feasts and offerings, I won't say feasts, but several offerings that are given during this month. This month became so important that it actually became the beginning of their year. And it corresponds to our time of the year that is now March and April. This would be about in the beginning of that month now. If we were still reckoning that time. It's also called the Feast of the New Fruits and of the Young Ears, because the young ears of barley were just now forming. This month was reckoned not so much as a time on the calendar, but it began when the new moon appeared. And when this moon appeared, then that was the date for the beginning of this month. And it also was the date for the beginning of their year. So it could vary a little bit from time to time as exactly when this 14th day would be, because it depended on when the moon appeared in the right phase for them to be able to determine exactly when the month began. And in later years, there was even a dispute among the Jewish people as to exactly when the month began. And everybody didn't observe the Sabbath on exactly the same day didn't observe the Passover on the exact same day because they did not reckon the time exactly the same. That's according to some of the writers. We find that they also, according to Numbers 9, verses 1 through 5, they also observed this Passover while they were in the wilderness. Now, at the time it's given here in Deuteronomy, they're just fixing to leave the wilderness. But it was observed while in the wilderness. Verse 2, thou shalt therefore sacrifice the Passover unto the Lord thy God of the flock and the herd in the place which the Lord shall choose to place his name there. Now, the Passover, of course, was the lamb, and it could also be a kid, either one. And he says, of the flock and the herd. It could come from the flock, it could come from the herd. And it was to be done in the place which the Lord shall choose to place his name there. Now we know that this would be where the tabernacle was. That's where the Passover lamb was sacrificed. When they first went into Canaan, it varied as to where the tabernacle happened to be. Later, when the temple was built, then it was at the temple in Jerusalem. That's where the Passover was sacrificed. And as we stop and think about it, this causes us to wonder just how they did manage to keep this, because of some problems that would come from the fact that these people were scattered out over a whole nation. And how did everybody manage to go to Jerusalem and have their Passover sacrificed on this 14th night of the first month? And we did read in Exodus 12 where the whole congregation was to observe this. And from the best that I can read and study and glean, we do know that the males went to do it. I do not know that all the families went. I do not know that all the women went. But the males went and did this. However, it talks like it was observed in the houses, but we know that it couldn't have been in everybody's houses because of the fact they had to travel from distant places to get to Jerusalem if they didn't live in the near vicinity of Jerusalem in order to be able to do this. We also would like to note that there were other sacrifices offered during this time, during this month, which I mentioned a while ago. Verse 3, thou shalt eat no leavened bread with it. 7 days shalt thou eat unleavened bread therewith, even the bread of affliction, for thou camest forth out of the land of Egypt in haste, that thou mayest remember the day when thou camest forth out of the land of Egypt all the days of thy life. Now this unleavened bread was symbolic of being pure and free from sin. And associated with the feast of the Passover itself, which was this lamb or the kid, associated with that was a 7-day feast called the Feast of Unleavened Bread. It began on the 15th day of this first month and lasted through the 21st day. And in that, during that time, there was to be no leaven in their houses, and they were to eat this bread that's called the bread of affliction. Now, it's called the bread of affliction probably for several reasons. One reason is probably because it was not very palatable. It was an unleavened bread. And I was talking with a Jewish person this week about unleavened bread, and she stated that they added butter to it to make it more palatable to eat. But it was made of flour. It could have been several kinds of flour. And it did have salt and oil added to it, and it was baked in a pan. And that's the very same type of bread we eat today whenever we observe the Lord's Supper. It was taken from this feast of the Passover. And it's interesting to note that it's called the bread of affliction. It was during a time when they were greatly afflicted, their lives were in danger, they were having to be ready to take their flight on the morrow. They ate it standing up with their shoes on and their staff in their hands and girt about and ready to take flight. And so as the Israelites ate this in commemoration of that time, they were to remember. He says that thou mayest remember the day when thou camest forth out of the land of Egypt all the days of thy life. So this was a feast of commemoration, to remember something. And whenever we keep the Lord's Supper in this day and time, it too is a time of commemoration. We remember the Lord. It is a time of remembrance. So there, that part is consistent with what we do today. Verse 4, and there shall be no leavened bread seen with thee in all thy coast 7 days. Neither shall there anything of the flesh which thou sacrificest the first day at even remain at night until the morning. Now, this Passover lamb was not to remain after that night. Whenever morning came, it was to be destroyed. And I don't know all the reason for this, but some of the writers seem to think that it was because in that country the meat would decay so rapidly in absence of any kind of refrigeration that they were not to keep it for more than a certain number of hours, and then they were to destroy it. But we do know that on the night that they ate this the first time and they were ready to depart on the morrow, that they wouldn't have had time to have tried to preserve or keep any of it the next day. Verse 5, thou mayest not sacrifice the Passover within any of thy gates, which the Lord thy God giveth thee. Now this is interesting to me. They could not sacrifice it at home. And within any of thy gates may even indicate any of the other cities. Probably does indicate any of the cities, because they could only do it in the one place, the place where the Lord should choose to place his name. And eventually that became Jerusalem, where the temple was. The priests are the ones who sacrificed or who killed the lamb. But at the place which the Lord thy God shall choose to place his name in, there thou shalt sacrifice the Passover at even, at the going down of the sun, at the season that thou camest forth out of Egypt. And they were doing it at evening time at the going down of the sun. We read in Mark 14, and this is also given in three of the other Gospels, of the account when our Savior ate the Passover and was getting ready for the Passover, beginning in Mark 14, the 12th verse. And the first day of unleavened bread, when they killed the Passover, his disciples said unto him, Where wilt thou that we go and prepare that thou mayest eat the Passover? Now remember, they had to do it at Jerusalem. They had to sacrifice the Passover at Jerusalem. And so the disciples asked Jesus, Where do you want us to go and prepare that we may eat the Passover? And he sendeth forth two of his disciples and saith unto them, Go ye into the city, and there shall meet you a man bearing a pitcher of water. Follow him, and wheresoever he shall go in, say ye to the good man of the house, The master saith, Where is the guest chamber, where I shall eat the Passover with my disciples? And he will show you a large upper room furnished and prepared. There make ready for us. And his disciples went forth, and came into the city, and found as he said unto them, and they made ready the Passover. Now, on this occasion, Jesus, being all-knowing and having all power really at his disposal, told them to go into the city and meet this man who would be bearing a pitcher of water and follow him, and he would lead them to the right house. And when they got to the house, they would ask the master of the house, Where is the guest chamber? And he would lead them to this upper room. Now, Jesus had to miraculously know these things. There's no way they could have accidentally gone and met a man with a pitcher of water who would have led them to the house. And probably they were doing this in a rather secretive way so that Judas wouldn't know beforehand where the place was and consequently had them to arrest Jesus while they were eating the Passover. And so after they did this, the 16th verse says, And they made ready the Passover. Now, to make ready the Passover means that they took the lamb to the temple, or they went to the temple and chose a lamb that was already there. As I understand it, by this time they had many, many lambs at the temple ready to be sacrificed, and you went to the temple and picked out the one that you were going to use, and the priest then would kill the lamb. And so we find that Jesus did this the way that it's stated here. They went to the place where the Lord placed his name. And you wonder about the rest of the families. How did they manage to do this, or did they do this? As I understand it, the males, when they were about 12 years old, they could then go for the first time to the temple and participate in the sacrifices. Well, we also read in Luke, the second chapter, the story of Jesus when he was about 12 years old. Luke, the second chapter, beginning with the 40th verse. Well, the fourth verse says, And the child grew and waxed strong in spirit, filled with wisdom, and the grace of God was upon him. Now his parents went to Jerusalem every year at the feast of the Passover. So here we see Jesus' mother and daddy were still following this same rule. They went to Jerusalem at the feast of the Passover. And here it says, every year at the Feast of the Passover. And when he was 12 years old, they went up to Jerusalem after the custom of the feast. So now Jesus was old enough to go to the temple like the other males could and participate in the offerings at the temple. And then the story, as you know, goes on that when they'd fulfilled the days and as they returned, the child Jesus tarried behind in Jerusalem, and Joseph and his mother knew not of it, and then it tells about how they had to go back to find him. But I just wanted to point out the fact that Joseph and Mary still followed this same rule of going to Jerusalem every year for the Passover. And Jesus, when he was 12, went with them, and he was in the temple. So that's following right along with what this teaches. But as I said, we wonder about the women. One writer said that some of the older devout women also went. But here we see Peter eating the Passover with Jesus, and his wife was not present. And so it makes us wonder. They had to rent a room or make arrangements for a room, for a place to eat this. We read in Galatians 26:28. Where he says that, for as many of you as have been baptized into Christ have put on Christ. There is neither Jew nor Greek, there is neither bond nor free, there is neither male nor female, for you are all one in Christ Jesus. Now, in the New Testament age, there is not a distinction made between male and female when we come to offering sacrifices to God. And so, that idea of all the males going to Jerusalem three times a year would not be carried over into the New Testament age, because from that standpoint, from a spiritual standpoint, they're neither male nor female, neither Jew nor Greek. And circumcision doesn't determine whether you can or can't serve God, whereas then a person that was not circumcised, a male that was not circumcised, could not eat of the Passover. Well, again in Acts 18:21, I'd like to read that reference also about the Apostle Paul. As he was concluding his second missionary journey, but he bade them farewell, saying, I must by all means keep this feast that cometh in Jerusalem, but I will return again unto you if God will, and he sailed from Ephesus. So here God was going to Jerusalem to keep the feast. Paul was going to Jerusalem to keep the feast. And it's thought by the writers that this was the feast of the Passover. And so everything seems to point in the direction of the fact that it is true that they did have to go to Jerusalem. They did have to go to the place where the Lord placed his name there. And that's where the lamb was sacrificed. It could not be done in any of their gates, any of the other cities, only in Jerusalem. Now how they worked out the logistics of all the nation going there, if all the nation went, I'm not able to say. But we do know that all the males were obligated to go, if they were able to. Verse 7 now of our chapter in Deuteronomy 16. And thou shalt roast and eat it in the place which the Lord thy God shall choose, and thou shalt turn in the morning and go unto thy tents. Now this phrase here, go unto thy tents, I understand that to mean temporary dwellings, dwellings that a sojourner or a pilgrim would use while observing this feast. 6 days shall thou eat unleavened bread, and on the seventh day shall be a solemn assembly to the Lord thy God. Thou shalt do no work therein. Now this, the lamb was sacrificed on the 14th night and eaten that night. Then on the 15th day began the Feast of Unleavened Bread. On that 15th day, it was a holy convocation treated like a Sabbath day. And then on the last day, the 21st day, it also was treated like a Sabbath day, and then there was another holy convocation. But after they ate the Passover, then they could go return to their tents the next day. Now this is a very important feast. It commemorated, as we said, the Passover angel, the death angel. It commemorated that night when they were actually then going to be released from their bondage. And it also is one that our Savior observed. And as he observed it, he instituted the Lord's Supper. He took from the unleavened bread there, and he also took from the drink element that they had, which we have stated to be fruit of the vine, and he instituted the Lord's Supper, stating that this bread is my body, which is broken for you, and this cup is my blood, which is shed for you. And as often as we do this, we're to do it in remembrance of him. And we find that upon the first day of the week, the disciples came together to do this, according to Acts 20 and 7. But we also find that this Passover feast is highly symbolic in that it symbolizes the forgiveness of sin so that we do not have to pay for our sins. On this night that it was instituted, the death angel was going to take the firstborn male of every family, not only the sons but also the animals. And in order to be freed from this death sentence, the lamb was sacrificed, his blood was placed on the doorpost and over the door, and when that was done, then that angel passed over those houses. And that death, the death of that lamb, is symbolic of the death of Jesus Christ. He is a lamb that takes away the sins of the world. His blood saves us from having the death sentence placed upon us. It was a male. It was without spot and blemish, just as he was. It didn't have a bone of its body broken, just as he didn't have a bone of his body broken. And this was prophesied in Psalms, and it was fulfilled in the book of John. John 19, 33 and 36 tells about this. And so he met the same type that lamb met to be qualified to be this kind of a sacrifice. So it has high meaning to us today because it not only symbolizes the release of God's people from their bondage and the escape of punishment for sins, death, but it also symbolizes to us a release from our bondage of sin and an escape from our punishment for sin, which is also death, by the sacrifice of our Lamb, the Son of God. Now it's very fitting that on the night that he was betrayed, it's the same night that he ate this Passover supper, it was during the time they were celebrating the Passover that our Savior was also crucified and shed his blood. It was during the Feast of Unleavened Bread. And in the book of 1 Corinthians, the 5th chapter, the 7th verse, the statement is made, "Purge out therefore the old leaven, that you may be a new lump, as you are unleavened, for even Christ, our Passover, is sacrificed for us." So the New Testament describes Christ as being our Passover. He is the lamb that we would look to be sacrificed, to use the blood of, to protect us from having to suffer for our sins. Now, I'd like to point out that this passage in 1 Corinthians 5 is not telling us to keep the Passover feast, and it also is not telling us that the communion service is a Passover feast. What it is saying, though, is that the Christian life is a type of a Passover feast for us. Notice how he words this. "Purge out therefore the old leaven, that you may be a new lump, as ye are unleavened." Now this is not just something to be done on the first day of the week, on the 14th night of the first month. This is something to be done all the time. "Purge out the old leaven. For even Christ our Passover is sacrificed for us. Therefore let us keep the feast." We're keeping this feast continually. He's already been sacrificed. We don't sacrifice him over and over again. He's already been sacrificed for us. So now's the time to keep the feast. We don't have to wait. Now's the time to keep the feast. Just like in the Old Testament, when they kept the Passover, once somebody said, "Well, the lamb has been sacrificed. He's ready." That's time to keep the feast. He was sacrificed at even, and they ate it that night, and none of it was left over for the next day. That's the time to keep the feast. All right, our sacrifice, our Passover is sacrificed for us. Therefore, let us keep the feast. Not with old leaven, neither with the leaven of malice and wickedness, but with the unleavened bread of sincerity and truth. See, this is a highly figurative passage, but it still, no doubt, no less, has the application to us that we today are to symbolically, in our lives, continually keep this Passover feast with what he calls here, not with the old leaven, but with the of malice and wickedness, but with the unleavened bread of sincerity and truth. Not just a one-time-a-week affair or one-time-a-year affair, but we keep it continuously because our Passover is sacrificed now, Christ. So I just wanted to point out the impact that this feast day has on the Christian age and on us as Christians, as reflected from the teaching of the New Testament. Now, beginning in the 9th verse, we have the account given of the next feast that they were to keep. This feast is called the Feast of Harvest, the Feast of Weeks, the Feast of the First Fruits, and also the Day of Pentecost. Rather than lasting 7 days, like the Feast of Unleavened Bread lasted, it was a one-day feast. And there's much that we've assumed about this feast, maybe that we should not have assumed, because most of what most of us know about this feast, we read about it in Acts, the 2nd chapter, and when the day of Pentecost was fully come. That's really the extent of what we know about it. This feast was a feast of joy that, from all I can read, was given in the middle of the harvest. They started the harvest at the time of the Passover. They finished the harvest on the third feast, the third major feast, which is the Feast of Tabernacles, or the Ingathering, on the 7th month. But here we have now this Feast of the Pentecost. It was to be, verse 9, 7 weeks shall thou number unto thee. Begin to number the 7 weeks from such time as thou beginnest to put the sickle to the corn. Now, according to what I can read, the way they counted this 7 weeks is, they went back to the time of the Passover, the 14th night they ate the Passover, the 15th day they kept the Holy Convocation, and on the 16th day, which is the second day really, the 16th day they went out and gathered a sheaf of barley, and the priest offered it as a wave offering, and they started counting from that day for 49 days. It'd be 49 days from that day. It'd be 50 days from the previous day, the 15th. And so this could fall on most any day of the week. It did not have to be on the first day of the week. And at the Feast of Pentecost, The primary offering that was made was loaves that were baked from this barley sheaf that had been cut back there on this 16th day. That was when the corn was in its young stage, when they were just beginning the harvest. The harvest hadn't even begun. They went out and gathered this ceremonially to use to begin counting the 7 weeks, and then they took this barley and they baked the bread, and that's what they offered in this Feast of Pentecost. So the word Pentecost means the 50th, and it would have to do with the 50th day, and it was a Greek word actually. Now, some of the Jews had a different understanding of this, and they said that this day of Pentecost, or this 50th day, would be counted from the first day after the Sabbath that occurred during the Feast of Unleavened Bread. And so if that was the accounting of it, then it would always fall on the first day of the week. But from what I can read, there's no way to prove that it had to fall on the first day of the week. And as we look at the account in Acts, the 2nd chapter, it's most difficult to prove, then, that day was actually the first day of the week. Because Jesus began, he ate the Passover on what was probably Tuesday night. Many people think it was Thursday night. Even had it been Thursday night, it still would not have allowed this to have fallen right exactly on the first day of the week. And so all that we really know about that being on the first day of the week is just that we have assumed that it's the first day of the week. And I, from reading from the Bible, I cannot prove that that was the first day of the week. But it really doesn't change anything because our directions of when to worship and how to worship are given in the Bible, and we don't have to guess at that. So it seems that this came in the midst of the harvest. It was a celebration of joy having to do with the harvest. But it also was a celebration, according to what I can read, and here again, I have not been able to prove this from the Bible, but it was also a celebration of the giving of the law. Because it occurred at about the same amount of time from the Passover night as giving of the law did from the Passover night. 50 days. And so it's been commonly accepted that this was a feast commemorating the giving of the law on Mount Sinai. Well, let's begin with the ninth verse. 7 weeks shalt thou number unto thee. Begin to number the 7 weeks from such time as thou beginnest to put the sickle to the corn. Now, that'd be that getting of that ceremonial sheath on the 16th day of Nisan. And thou shalt keep the feast of weeks unto the Lord thy God, with the tribute of a freewill offering of thine hand, which thou shalt give unto the Lord thy God, according as the Lord thy God hath blessed thee. Now, one of the things they brought to this feast was what he calls here a freewill offering. And later in the chapter, it seems that this happened in all the feasts. But they brought a freewill offering, which means that the Lord did not specify the quantity of the offering, did not specify how much, but every man was put on his own honor as to how much to give, and he gave it according as the Lord thy God hath blessed thee. They started the harvest 7 weeks ago. So he had a pretty good idea of how well he was going to be blessed by this time. And he gave according to how he'd been blessed. Now we know the rule of the Lord is that as he sows heavily, he wants to reap heavily. And we're told in 2 Corinthians, the 9th chapter, if you sow sparingly, you're going to reap sparingly. And if you sow bountifully, you're going to reap bountifully. And he's talking about our giving, a very similar type of an offering, a freewill offering, in which each one of us are on our honor to give as we've been blessed by the Lord, according to how much we've been blessed. So it's an interesting tie in there. This is a principle of God that he used then, and the New Testament seems to teach that he uses it again today. So they brought this free will offering, according as the Lord thy God has blessed thee. Verse 11, and thou shalt rejoice before the Lord thy God, thou and thy son and thy daughter and thy manservant and thy maidservant and the Levite that is within thy gates, and the stranger and the fatherless and the widow that are among you, in the place where the Lord thy God hath chosen to place his name there. So here again, this feast would have had to have been carried out eventually at Jerusalem. Well, we read in the second chapter of Acts, as they were assembling to keep the Pentecost, Luke says, and when the day of Pentecost was fully come, they were all with one accord in one place. And it goes on in verse 5, and there were dwelling at Jerusalem Jews, devout men, out of every nation under heaven. And they go on down in verse 8, and now here we, every man in our own tongue, wherein we were born, Parthians and Medes and Elamites and the dwellers in Mesopotamia and in Judea and Cappadocia and in Pontus and Asia and Phrygia and Pamphylia and Egypt and in the parts of Libya about Cyrene and the strangers of Rome, Jews and proselytes, Cretes and Arabians. We do hear them speak in our tongues the wonderful works of God. And the apostles were able to speak in the tongues of these different nations, miraculously. But I want to point out that there were men out of every nation under heaven gathered to Jerusalem for this feast. And so he says in this 11th verse, in the place where the Lord thy God has chosen to place his name there. So that all of the family, it seems, would go. The son and the daughter and the servants and the Levites within thy gates, all would go to Jerusalem to observe this feast. And they were to rejoice before the Lord thy God. This was to be a feast of joy. It wasn't a feast of any kind of a mourning, but a feast of joy. And if it were a commemoration of the giving of the law on Mount Sinai, then of course this was a good reason for joy, because this was the law that God intended for them to live by, to cause them to be blessed by him. Verse 12, and thou shalt remember that thou wast a bondman in Egypt, and thou shalt observe and do these statutes. Now, during this feast, there was to be some remembrance made. Remember that they were a bondman in Egypt, and observe do these statutes. Now, in verse 13, we have the third major feast described. Thou shalt observe the Feast of Tabernacles 7 days, after that thou hast gathered in thy corn and thy wine. Now, Numbers 29, chapter verses 12 through 38 gives many of the details of this feast that we're not going to read about. But we see the harvest was still going on, and this feast came 7 days after they had gathered in the corn and the wine. This feast occurred in the 7th month. Now, the 7th month was an important month. It was on the first day of that month, they had the Feast of Trumpets, which began their calendar year. On the 10th day of that month was the Great Day of Atonement, which is probably the most solemn occasion of all the whole year. And on the 15th day of that 7th month, we have then this Feast of Tabernacles. And it would be then 7 days after they gathered in the corn and the wine. It's also called the Feast of the Ingathering. It's the fall feast. The first feast, the Feast of Passover, was in the spring. The second feast, the Feast of the Pentecost, was in the summer. The third feast, this Feast of Tabernacles, is in the fall time. And thou shalt rejoice in thy feast, thou and thy son, and thy daughter, and thy manservant, and thy maidservant, and the Levite, the stranger, and the fatherless, and the widow that are within thy gates. 7 days thou shalt keep a solemn feast unto the Lord thy God in the place which the Lord shall choose. Now this was a 7-day feast, not a 1-day feast like Pentecost, but a 7-day feast. Because the Lord thy God shall bless thee in all thine increase and in all the works of thine hands, therefore thou shalt surely rejoice. So this was a feast of joy. It commemorated the completion of the harvest, and it was a feast to commemorate their sojourn in the wilderness when they had to live in tabernacles or booths. I'd like to turn to Leviticus, the 23rd chapter, and read beginning in the 39th verse. Leviticus 23, verse 39. Also in the 15th day of the 7th month, when ye have gathered in the fruit of the land, ye shall keep a feast unto the Lord 7 days. On the first day shall be a Sabbath, and on the 8th day shall be a Sabbath, and ye shall take you on the first day the boughs of goodly trees, branches of palm trees, and the boughs of thick trees, and the willows of the brook, and you shall rejoice before the Lord your God 7 days, and you shall keep it a feast unto the Lord 7 days in the year. It shall be a statute forever in your generations. You shall celebrate it in the 7th month. You shall dwell in booths 7 days. All that are Israelites born shall dwell in booths, that your generations may know that I made the children of Israel to dwell in booths when I brought them out of the land of Egypt. I am the Lord your God. And Moses declared unto the children of Israel the feasts of the Lord. So they dwelt in these little booths. They dwelt in these tabernacles to commemorate the time when they had to live in the tabernacles back